Good morning, afternoon, or evening, wherever you are in the world, and welcome to the Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast spoiler minisode for Christopher Nolan's Oppenheimer, a double bill with our spoiler minisode for Barbie. My name is Matt Hudson from What I Watched Tonight, and joining me from across the pond, he's a statesman to my Kingsman, it's John Burke from BurkeReviews.com. How are you, sir?
I am doing very well, Matt, ready to spoil a true story.
Yeah, ready to spoil something that's really happened. Well, again, spoilers, if you haven't seen Oppenheimer, it's 3 hours long. Go watch it and then listen to us on your journey back, maybe, and see if you agree with what you say, with what we say. But you have been warned, full spoilers, done. John and myself both very much enjoyed this film, so let's get it. Where do you want to start then with this big sprawling epic?
I mean, I think we start with the bomb, right? Like, so yeah. Any other filmmaker, this is a CG extravaganza of an explosion and not Christopher Nolan. If you don't know this, listeners, and maybe we should have mentioned this in the non-spoiler, because this, we know he makes the bomb, like, history happened, although we are also learning in real time that history can be altered and changed to make it where slaves learn something valuable from being slaves.
And, yeah. Unreal.
That is not my opinion, folks. That is something that is in the news that is happening in the state that I live in. But nevertheless,
idiot's opinion, yes.
Nevertheless, Nolan obviously does not like drop a nuclear bomb, but recreates the explosion. And it's all practical and it's incredible. The scene is, what movie was it where, Last Jedi, right?
Oh, okay.
Where the sound cut out and like they had to have a sign at the box office warning people, like, it's not a glitch. It's intentional. We get almost that same level of like sheer silence until we get the bomb, right? When it actually hits the sound wave and it's intense.
Yeah.
The they're all looking through their welder's glass, and man, what a sequence. And obviously for 2 hours we're building up to that, but I'm looking at my watch like, we're at 2 hours, we have an hour left.
The hell are they gonna do?
Well, I thought
Dark Knight in, because I thought you were gonna say, what was the other film Nolan blew up a building in or something? That was obviously the hospital in the Dark Knight, but
yep. And the truck flip in Dark Knight.
Oh man,
it's what. Because they flipped the semi truck, like, legitimately, like, and yeah. They had one take, and it was in a real city. It wasn't on a soundstage. Like, if we're off at all, we take out a building and we're in trouble. So it's like insane stuff Nolan has done.
The craft and the effort that people put into filmmaking, but it pays off because CGI fire is hard to do because it looks bad. This this looked like a real bomb was dropped, and it was, and the build up to that moment as well, with the physicists obviously creating or doing the theory and trying to create the math needed to obviously make this bomb, and the agreements, the disagreements, the fallouts that came from it, having to get enough plutonium and seeing the marble jars going up and up and up. It's funny because, like we said, you know what happens. We know the atrocity that occurred because of this. But still, there is a real tension eked out because of the writing, because of the performance, even because of the way certain shots are framed and like how tightly they're shot, where you kind of feel like a fly on the wall or this claustrophobic feeling because of it. But yeah, when that bomb is dropped, it's insane. It's such an incredibly powerful moment, because what happens afterwards is it. As soon as that bomb's dropped, we see everyone cheering and celebrating, like, wow, we know we can detonate an atomic bomb. Like, wow, okay. But the very next scene, the government are just carting the bombs off. Oppenheimer is literally saying, you know, you need to make sure it's dropped from the right height or else it's not going to work. And they're like, listen, guy, we got it from here. You know, the government, they just turn up, take it away, no words. You've done your job, we'll take it from it. And then of course it goes on to Gary Oldman as well as the president,
Truman.
which was Truman, yeah, which was a surprise to me. He's played Churchill and Truman, and obviously his words as well to Oppenheimer are chilling. And it's I've seen people online, and I've seen one YouTuber who's bloody awful saying we needed to see Hiroshima to make this work. Like,
what?
No, we didn't. We saw the impact in flashbacks, but the impact of Hiroshima was seen in Oppenheimer, in his visions, in the fact that he couldn't even watch the aftermath when they were showing it to him. And it was moments like when the when the military general, the sergeant or whoever it was, they were you know what's coming. Well, they were picking the list of targets of what of where to drop the bomb, and they gave 12 targets. And he said, actually, no, there's 11. I think he says, don't drop it on Kyoto because it's, you know, it has cultural significance. Oh, well, also my wife and I honeymooned there, and it's a great place. It, you know, the idea that, you know, this place was taken off, they were picking names like they were nothing, like it was a raffle, which had no consequences. And when we realized how many people died, and the government side of it were just like, yeah, this is what was needed to end the war, son. You know, I took the decision, screw you. It had to be done. There was no afterthought of the fallout and the ramifications. The only person who really, that we see, have that forethought is Oppenheimer, and he's thinking that before the damn bomb is dropped. He knows what's going to happen. He knows that he is the destroyer of worlds, and the ending line is perfection here. But yeah, the sheer cruelty and inhumaneness of the government, some things never change throughout here, is that's the chilling part. We didn't need to see, you know, we didn't need to see the human side of it on Hiroshima as the bomb is dropped. That, you know, there's many films and documentaries about that. What we got instead was 10 times more chilling and frightening than simply showing us what happened. You know, what we got, I think, was better than anything they could have done by just showing Hiroshima and Nagasaki.
I agree completely. And also, like, that's where it starts to get really distasteful, right? Like,
yeah.
And there's a documentary I talked about during Tribeca called Richland.
Yes.
Which is about the city that harvested the plutonium that would be used in the bomb that's dropped on Nagasaki, and the very mixed feelings of the people who still live in that town and who have a connection. Like, several of their family members were parts of the miners or the scientists refining it. And some of them have lost people because of the radiation poisoning. So, like, but yet there are people in that town who cherish their legacy as part of the bomb. And that's Oppenheimer's legacy, is that he won World War II by dropping the bomb. And of course, there's some disputes about that. Wasn't the war already over? And we were just waiting on one group. And the initial motivation for building the bomb was to beat the Nazis to doing it, but which obviously, had the Nazis succeeded before us, they would have used it. There's no doubt in anybody's mind that the Nazis would have used the nuclear bomb had they created it. But so, like, there is justification for its existence because we didn't want to be the ones with the gun pointed at us, so to speak. And yet Oppenheimer in this film is depicted as struggling emotionally with that decision and the repercussions of what he created. And that is important to me. Like, I don't know how true it is. I don't know if Oppenheimer truly was. I mean, I know there's accounts of it, obviously, but I'm saying, like, I don't know. We don't know the real guy, so we don't know how he really felt outside of what we're being told now. But I want to believe that a scientist wouldn't want this level of destruction, wouldn't be okay with it. Mm-hmm. And again, in the movie, it's painted that just the test could be enough to stop the war. Like, knowing that we could do it would be sufficient, which is obviously not what other people felt. The Rami Malek reveal, his monologue where he basically shines the light on Strauss and how Strauss basically destroyed Oppenheimer's career post the war, post the bomb, I should say, because of that petty. The implication of the film is over the petty rivalry and the way he had such self-confidence issues that he believed Albert Einstein and Oppenheimer spoke about him, which we later learned not at all, at all. It was just his perception and that ego. And man, just Downey Jr. just plays that so well. And I think Rami Malek delivers that monologue so great. And Alden Ehrenreich doesn't get a lot to do, but he has these little subtle, like, reactions to Strauss that I think are really effective and powerful. I like their interactions and stuff. I really, really enjoyed so many of the performances in this movie.
Yeah, RDJ is fantastic in this film, and his portrayal of Strauss is brilliant. And he kind of, to start with, he's kind of a very, very jovial type guy, wanting Oppenheimer to join his place of education, place of work, place of study. And then later, and that's in your color scenes, your subjective scenes. And objectively, we get to see Strauss, our post-war, really discrediting Oppenheimer, ensuring his security clearance was revoked in the way of that like absolutely sham hearing. It wasn't a trial, like they said, but that rigged hearing, which is always going to go against him. And Emily Blunt is superb in these scenes when she's facing off against Jason Clarke's prosecutor. She's so good in this, and the performances throughout are great. And I wanted to shout out Emily Blunt there, because again, not a huge role, pivotal, some of the best scenes belong to her. But yeah, RDJ is excellent, and when we start to see his narcissism come through at the end there, and that truly satisfying moment when, because you can tell that Alden Ehrenreich's character, his advisor, you can tell that he does not agree with him. When he sees Strauss on the front of Time magazine, and he finds out that this whole thing was, Strauss knew all along what was going to happen here, and he was behind all of this. He was behind the plan to discredit Oppenheimer. So once you see that, you see something in Alden Ehrenreich's character change. He's like, well, hold on, this isn't, he knows it isn't right. And Strauss is like, well, look, to get ahead, this is what you got to do. And that truly satisfying moment, when Rami Malek's, his scientist comes in and he takes a stand and just crushes Strauss in front of everybody, which leads to him not getting that coveted seat on the Senate, because one of the young senators named John F. Kennedy voted against him, which was a nice little wink and a nod to how history just kind of intertwines and connects with each other, because obviously the JFK story has been told many, many times. But that story of Strauss was very, very compelling, especially in those hearing scenes, just scenes of people talking at a table. Very well done. I think they crushed it because of the performances. The writing is good. The writing is very good, in fact. But the performances absolutely crush her. I can't name one which wasn't up to the speed of everybody else, even the ones who were in it for like 5 seconds, like Alex Wolff. He's great. He puts a bit of paper in someone's face and I'm like, hey, Oscar for that guy, best supporting actor right there. I jest somewhat, but yeah, the performances throughout are great. And that's the thing about this film, is I think it's one of Nolan's best films, because everything I've mentioned on the non-spoiler, apart from the audio, the dialogue mix, it wasn't great. But everything else culminates brilliantly. The performances are great. The visuals are great. Ludwig Göransson's score is stunning. The story is great. The non-linear way of storing it. The ending, the way at the end when he's like, I think I've created something that's going to destroy the world, or maybe I think I already have. And he's envisioning the world ending because of what he's created, is so damn powerful and profound. In the knowledge now, of course, that was the only time a nuclear bomb was ever used in anger, in war. I mean, it's obviously we've had tests, but the only time a nuclear weapon has ever been used in warfare was that moment in Hiroshima and Nagasaki. But it's the knowledge that you're kind of watching it thinking, God damn, these things are out there, and it just takes one person to push a button and then that is it. The retaliation and that, and it's gone. They've really got across the idea of just how apocalyptic this weapon, or this bit of this theory, this work of mathematics and science really was, or really is, in fact. It's everything comes together here. Whatever Nolan's been accused of lacking before, I think actually he's stepped up to the plate here. Not to say that he's ever been a bad filmmaker, don't misquote me, guys, but I've mentioned before, dialogue was something that was used against him a lot. Oh, he can't write well, they're so wooden. Here, the writing is very, very good. The performances throughout, very, everything. I'm not going to go through it again, but there's not an awful lot wrong with this film, JB, at all. There's minor nitpicks here and there, if that. I don't think the runtime's an issue. It took me a while to get into it, 45 minutes, but then when I realised I've still got 2 hours and 15 minutes to play with, it's fine. It's a damn good film, isn't it, JB?
It is. It really, truly is. And I'm again, much like Barbie, I'm excited because I don't know if I could have been more hyped for the next Nolan film, the first non-WB Nolan film for a while. True. It did not disappoint.
Yeah, 100% agree, my friend. So the Barbenheimer weekend gave us two incredibly good films, two great times at the theatres, two packed theatres, theatre showings, two brilliant crowds to go along with it, and a ton of records broken at the box office. We'll be talking about this one for years, JB, and thankfully both films were some of the best this year of 2023. But that's going to bring an end then to our spoiler minisode for Oppenheimer. Do check out our Barbie spoiler minisode as well for our thoughts there. It's been a blast talking about the films with you, JB, but that is it. But we would love to hear what you thought about both of these films, but Oppenheimer especially, because that's where we are now. You can find us on Twitter/X @BAMP_podcast. So that's BAMP_podcast. JB, where are we on Instagram and Threads?
Bloody Awesome Movie Pod.
Yes, sir. Facebook, Bloody Awesome Movie Podcast. You can see us on Rotten Tomatoes as well. You'll see us contributing to the Tomato Meter. And you can find me, whatiwatchtonight.co.uk, and What I Watch Tonight across all of the socials, including Letterboxd. JB, where on earth are you?
I am at BurkeReviews.com and at BurkeReviews on all the social media platforms.
Yes, sir. Go check us both out. We'd appreciate your support. And also drop us a 5-star rating and review on your podcast provider of choice, just to get more listeners in and bump us up the listening algorithm lists as well. But with that, guys, as always, stay bloody awesome.
And keep watching movies. Blood, 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 bloody. 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 Blood, blood, bloody. Awesome.